You are listening to the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speakers Series podcast, featuring acknowledged experts sharing the current state, knowledge, and benefits of computer-related standards. This program is supported by the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speakers Bureau, a joint coordinated effort between the chapters and standards activities boards of the IEEE Computer Society. It's designed to bring advanced and current computing standards information to local chapters. Please visit www.computer.org to learn more about this program, membership with the IEEE Computer Society, and the wealth of current technical information, community services, and personalized services for the world's computing professionals.
So the first one is John. Well, they're both called John. John Arrows. John comes. He's a compatriot. He comes from Ontario. Well, okay, yeah. There's still a few people living there. They haven't all moved to Victoria. He's a senior member of IEEE. Senior member, not senile member. Okay. I hope you get that right. There's quite a few of us there that are senior member. Doesn't mean old. It means just people that have some weight. Not necessarily the weight you think we have. Okay. Let's not go into that. He's a big entro in the standards activity board, mostly, you know, exploiting his long experience at the Ontario Power, something in the government there, you know, making sure that their nuclear power plants do not blow up in the face of the public and that kind of thing. You know, as you know, here in BC, we're much more conservative. We produce all our electricity from, you know, dams and that kind of thing. But okay. Anyhow, he's also a CSDP, as I noticed, and he's a PNG. Wow, you know, so much things in common. CSDP, Certified Software Development Professional. I have certificate 99. I don't know what's your number. Okay, anyhow, I won't speak too much. This is John Arrows.
Thank you kindly. I'd be glad to come back to Vancouver, perhaps during the Winter Olympics, so any invitation at that time would be great. My background, I've been with Ontario Power for over 25 years, and it's primarily within the nuclear industry, and I've been responsible for real-time control computers and basically safety shutdown systems at our nuclear facilities. So software, quite important. And when I tried to develop this presentation, I wanted to sort of not really stick, nuclear will come up a bit, but more as an example, but I'll try to sort of point out the key things for safety, you know, from all matters of safety. So I'll talk a bit about the basic concepts and issues. System and software safety, some industry approaches to safety engineering. I'll review the key safety standards, and I'll talk about the process of safety cases and summarize, and then I've got some example project failures. I won't go into them, but you could see them during, you know, any handouts. What is safety? Now, what I tried to do is pull out definitions that are accepted. And the one standard that is out there is the IEC 61508. It's a multi-part standard, and it defines safety as the freedom from unacceptable risk or physical injury or damage to the health of people, either directly as a result of damage to property or to the environment. Functional safety, it's that part of overall safety that depends on a system or equipment operating correctly in response to its inputs. And safety-related systems are those systems that are required to perform a safety function. This is to ensure risks are kept at an accepted level. There's a concept called the safety integrity level, which specifies the level of safety performance for a safety function on a scale of 1 to 4. Now, these safety functions, these safety levels are very specific to 61508. This standard is in wide use, mainly in Europe, but it is being applied in North America. Now, one of the key elements, like which is common between mine and John's talk, it's the element of risk. and risk analysis. Like, I'll be discussing risk analysis and hazards analysis many times during this presentation. I tried looking up a definition for what's a safety critical system, and it really is the same as a safety system, but the only distinction that you could have is a specific subset of safety related systems, i.e. at the highest integrity level. So these would be systems which are critical. They have a very important safety function. They either have to shut down a system in case of as a mitigating system. There is quite a few examples, like you've got medical devices, aircraft flight control, weapons, and nuclear systems. Now, in addition, many modern information systems are becoming safety critical in the general sense, because financial loss and even loss of life can result from failure. Some safety concerns, they necessarily increase the rigor of a software engineering process. Verification and validation are very particularly important. And you usually have extra effort involved in any safety development project. You need to have additional activities, hazard analysis. You need to have a disciplined risk management. You may need to utilize formal techniques, like in terms of mathematical specifications. You need to be able to trace in, requirements from the system requirements all the way down through the code. And you may also need to develop safety cases. And if you do use formal methods, you do require tools. And if you do have the tools, you also have to validate them for use. So to achieve safety, many factors have to be addressed. And that includes safety management, technical requirements for all safety lifecycle activities, and the competence of those involved in the activity. Now, I recently read an article. This was John Knight from University of Virginia, who was interviewed during a presentation for a safety critical systems club in the United Kingdom. And basically what he's saying is people developing critical systems are inadequately trained in basic software development and do not know their limitations. So software developers can often produce software that provides only certain basic functionality. Mistakes in software development will continue to be made, no matter how carefully the software is built, and failures will continue to occur. That is just the way the things work in engineering. But the current situation is really unacceptable. The cumulative losses associated with software-related failures have become very high. So from a professional responsibility point of view, software developers must be recognized as responsible professionals. So they need to understand the crucial importance of a specification, difficulties arising in concurrent programs, the limitations of testing, the effects of rounding error or the lack of timing predictability, the intricacies in a large number of fields, including real-time systems, formal specifications, and dependability assessment. So software developers, if you are a PEng, you have the responsibility for minimizing the risk of failure and ensuring public safety and security. So from a professional engineering point of view, it's a must, but it's also a must for anyone producing safety-critical software. So just as in other fields where the consequences of failure are high, there is a need to ensure that practitioners are properly monitored and properly trained. So some just very general causes of why we have these problems. Developing software is an inherently risky proposition. Balancing the budget schedule constraints while ensuring the efficiency, effectiveness, integrity, security, safety, and quality of the software. So it's always about trade-offs. The software development process is a complex undertaking. It's comprised of specifying, designing, implementing, and testing. And the major difference between software engineering and other engineering artifacts is that software is pure design. So for software, its unreliability is always the result of design faults, which in turn arise from human intellectual failures. And it's difficult to gain assurance of reliability, especially for critical systems. So many companies building safety critical software are just not using proper procedures or standards. So here you have, like, it's really two fundamental problems. One is the use of appropriate procedures and standards, and the other is the use of qualified people. Just recently, there was United States had a second National Software Summit report, which was dated April 29th, 2005, and it identified major gaps in requirements for software tools and technologies to routinely develop error-free software and the state of the art, and the state of the art and the state of the practice. And what they're recommending is elevating software to a national policy. And the purpose of this strategy is to achieve ability to routinely develop trustworthy products and to ensure the continued competitiveness of the U.S. software industry. So what they're aiming for is, I guess, a target date of software like 2015. And this is a national strategy to ensure U.S. security and competitiveness. So this is a very high-profile area. Now, I'm talking about safety, but you could just sort of drop the word safety and just say critical systems. And I think the same concepts apply. And I have a sort of a separate presentation where I sort of discuss safety and security commonalities. So what are system safety and software safety? System safety is a multidisciplinary activity that uses systems theory and systems engineering approaches to prevent foreseeable accidents and to minimize the results of unforeseen ones. Software safety is part of system safety. Software itself does not pose a hazard. It is only safety critical if it controls a physical source of energy. So the discipline of software safety is really the systematic approach to identifying, analyzing, and tracking software mitigation and control of hazards. Now, system engineering and software engineering need to treat safety in an integrated manner. And this is another key problem, that usually system engineers and software engineers are kind of independent and they're not working in an integrated fashion. Now, some of these ideas is there's two key books. One is a book called Safeware, which was by Nancy Levison. It's been around for a few years. And there's another book that she has on her website, which it's downloadable. It's a work in progress, and it's called A New Approach to System Safety Engineering. Now, system safety, it covers just more than technical aspects. And this is a quote from Jerome Lederer, who was the director of the NASA Manned Flight Safety Program for Apollo. And he basically says that system safety covers the total spectrum of risk management. It goes beyond the hardware and associated procedures of system safety engineering. It involves attitudes, motivation of designers and production people, employee management, rapport, the relation of industrial associations among themselves, etc. Now, what that says is, this really talks about, a safety culture. The safety culture is inherent not only to the whole organization, but it also needs to be shared among organizations. So particularly for complex systems where you have many different developers, they're all being integrated, they all need to be able to share the same safety culture. System safety issues. All dependability attributes are really emergent properties of systems. So dependability, you're looking at availability, reliability, safety, confidentiality, integrity, and maintainability. Now, security and safety, they involve common aspects like risk management and consideration through the entire life cycle. And usually a safe system also needs to be secure. Now, the trick is to build systems with the right mix of reliability and other dependability attributes. But dependability is only part of the equation of system safety. Reliability engineers often assume that reliability and safety are synonymous, but this assumption is true only in very special cases. It has been shown that reliable systems are unsafe or can be unsafe, and a safe system can be unreliable. There is obviously an overlap between reliability and safety, but many accidents occur without any component failure, where the part actually operated exactly as specified. And also the opposite is true. So a system may be thought to be safe if the system exhibits correct behavior and satisfies the system requirements. But the reliability perspective alone may ignore software and human factor pieces of the safety equation. An occupational and health safety perspective may ignore other aspects of system safety, in which developing a safety culture would be important. So what you have is you have a lot of different industries and a lot of different perspectives on safety, but they all can be very narrow, and they can all miss part of the puzzle or part of the answer. Something I pulled out again from, there was a white paper on approaches to safety engineering by Nancy Levison. And what it is she is kind of a bit of a summary about the approaches to safety engineering among different industries. So there are similarities between the commercial aircraft and nuclear power approach to safety. Both take a very conservative approach to introducing new technology and design. Both concentrate on component failure as the cause of accidents. The fly, fix, fly approach to learning from experience is very effective because basic designs change extremely slowly over time. And because their approaches to safety are very reliability oriented, they both tend to rely heavily on redundancy. So if you look like at particular nuclear plants, like we have triplicated control systems, we have dual redundant or dual safety shutdown systems. So we have defense in depth. And this has evolved over the years with experience, and pretty well most of those plants have similar redesign, and they've also been retrofitted if they are missing some key safety systems. But the significant difference between a nuclear power is that a nuclear power plant can rely on shutdown as a primary safety measure, whereas shutting down systems on a plane is not always an option. The chemical industry, it differs from the prior, from the other two, because it's not government regulated to the same extent. And it takes the approach to safety was by insurance needs. The term commonly used in the industry, loss prevention, reflects these origins. And loss in this case refers to the financial loss of damaged plant, third-party claims, and lost production. Component reliability and protection systems are still the main emphasis. Now, defense and safety, or defense and space, they both apply a system safety approach. They share a lot of common features that differ with the other industries described. They have tremendously complex designs, stretching the limit of current engineering techniques. The requirements for new and innovative designs to meet mission goals, and the continual introduction of new and unproven technology and limitations in the ability to test. So all these, this is where this concept and the holistic view of system safety is really important. Now, some fundamental program requirements for safety-related systems. Systems and software, they must be implemented in accordance with well-designed standards compatible with the safety importance of the application. So if you are working on a safety project, identify the standards first that you are following, get agreement with the regulator, if there is one. There may be additional sector-specific and country-specific regulatory requirements, and you may need a safety case. And I'll go into a safety case a little bit later, but it's also known, like you could almost think of certification and safety case are somewhat synonymous. So some key standards. I'll go into some general ones. ISO IEC 15288 system lifecycle processes. It's also an IEEE published standard. ISO IEC 12207, that's also published by IEEE. These are two key important standards laying out the software process. The basic thing is that when people, like the point I made earlier, that people aren't following standards and procedures. So these actually do lay out a set of processes that people should choose from, you know, for any particular project. And of course, the number of processes will probably increase the more critical the system is. The other standards to complement 15288 and 12207 is the risk management process standard and also measurement. And measurement metrics are very important. Now, getting to some specific safety-related standards, there's IEEE 1228 on software safety plans. It contains material useful in the management of software that is part of a system with safety requirements. ISO IEC 15026 on integrity levels. It describes additional techniques needed for high integrity systems. Currently, it is not process oriented, but it is being repositioned. There's also an older standard out called NCUL 1998. It's intended for the evaluation of products that rely on software and microelectronics to perform safety related functions. Now, basically, it's a product evaluation standard. It has been around for a number of years. It is still well used, and it does need updating. But it's really one of the few that is out there. And one of the problems is that product evaluation standards, they are not a guarantee of safety. They can specify some minimum requirements, and there's also, so there's a liability associated with these standards if people misinterpret them. Some basic core requirements. You perform software risk analysis, you design for safety, you verify and validate, and you have rigorous configuration management. But again, the key thing is you identify the potential safety hazards associated with the intended use. And you keep doing hazards analysis at different stages of the life cycle. I'll give a bit of a more depth of an overview on the TC 65-61-508. It's a standard called Functional Safety Electrical Electronic Programmable Electronic Safety Systems. It's meant to be, or should be used as a meta standard. Like this has really been supposed to be an umbrella standard for to produce various sector standards. Now, it's a fairly huge document. It's got 7 parts, so it is a multi-part standard. It gives you some general requirements, talks about system requirements, software requirements, definitions, and also gives some examples of methods for the determination of safety integrity levels. And it also gives guidelines on the application of parts 2 and 3, which is the system engineering and the software engineering phases. And it ends up with an overview of techniques and measures. Now, the key thing to keep in mind is that this standard, there is a lot of controversy. There's a lot of, it is being used. People do misuse it or do not know how to use it properly. And also, so you need to have care in how you implement the standard. But it is more, it should be a guidance document. And as stated, it's a generic standard intended to be applied by all sector variants, machinery, process, plant, medical, rail. And in fact, the IEC nuclear group has developed a standard which satisfies the intent of 61508. And it's the same as happened in the medical industry and some of the other industries. And there are other approaches that always, like they reference 61508. And what it does, it gives guidance on the use of systems which perform safety functions. It's a comprehensive approach involving concepts of a safety life cycle and all elements of protective systems. really a risk-based approach leading to determination of safety integrity levels, which required measures proportionate to the risk reduction required. Some basic definitions, again, I'll quote from 61508. The problem is that there is a lot of definitions out there. If you are in a particular area, make sure you use the definitions appropriate to that area and make sure everybody else is talking from the same page. So a hazard is a potential source of harm. Risk is the combination of the probability of occurrence of harm and the severity of that harm. People often use the terms hazard and risk interchangeably and not always in the correct context. So the point of recognizing hazard is that doing so gives you the opportunity to take it into the consideration in your decision making, which is the purpose of getting to know about hazards and the risks that they pose. So the process of hazard analysis, the main steps that 61508 calls for, and I guess this is the important part of the message, is you determine the hazards and the hazardous events in all modes of operation. You determine the event sequences leading to the hazardous events. You assess the risks against some tolerability criteria in the context of the particular circumstances. And you determine the required risk reductions. You specify safety requirements for the necessary risk reductions. You implement the safety requirements in safety functions, and you allocate the safety functions to safety-related systems or external risk reduction facilities. So what this means is that the safety function is either you can assign it to a subsystem which is comprised of software. It could be a number of subsystems, or it could be just a hardware-only system. And that's probably difficult to find because I think software is just about everywhere. So ensure that the reliability of the safety functions is appropriate to the tolerability criteria. You allocate a safety integrity level for each function, and you carry out safety planning to manage safety throughout the life of the system based on the safety system life cycle. So this is really what you call your basic prerequisite to doing a development of a safety system. So in diagram form, this really, you'll probably see this in many things. You start off with concept, overall scope definition, hazard and risk analysis, overall safety requirements, then you allocate your safety requirements to the various systems, you integrate the systems, and then you install and commission them, and then you validate the systems. And meanwhile, you have overall planning for both operation and maintenance, for validation and for installation and commissioning. And then you go through a cycle of overall modifications and retrofit over the life of the product until it's retired or disposed of. Just some hazards analysis techniques. I thought this would be just useful to know that these exist. System safety assessment, hazards and operability studies, failure modes, defects, and criticality analysis, fault tree analysis, numerical methods, and probabilistic reliability analysis. And there are fairly detailed documents. There are standards in some of these, and there are documents that describe how to follow these particular techniques. Now, for sector-based safety standards, you have for aircraft, you have the one RTCA DO-178B. Fairly key, that's a key standard. And then you have the ARP standards, which discuss the safety assessment process and certification considerations for complex aircraft systems. For nuclear, you have 608080, which is deals with software engineering for computers and safety systems of nuclear plants. Also IEC 987, which deals with programmed digital computers important to safety. So one's software, one's the hardware aspect. And there is a standard which is integrating the two concepts together, like a general system standard. So what you have is you have a bit of a family of standards that you need to follow for a particular project. And you also have IEEE 7-4.3.2 standard criteria for digital computers and safety systems. And that is followed by US NRC. US NRC mandates the use of that standard for any nuclear plants in the US. And it's also like if you meet those requirements, you also have to meet the requirements of that standard elsewhere. For aerospace, you have SAE AS 9100, an aerospace basic quality system standard. There's a NASA standard 8719. For medical devices, you have a 13485, and then you also have requirements for regulatory purposes. And railway, the sector, there's a number of standards there. They're primarily European, from the Senelec, from the European Union. And there's also the IEEE 1483 standard for the verification of vital functions in rail transit control. For defense, I've lumped really three countries together. There's some important standards. There's the MOD, the UK standards, Interim Defense Standards 56, dealing with safety management requirements. There's the MIL Standard 88882, standard practice for system safety, and the Australian Defense Standard 5679, which deals with procurement of computer-based safety critical systems. Now, most of the defense, like what they do is they work off each other, they study the lessons learned, and they more or less, there's a common approach. Process control, there's a particular standard for application of safety instrumented systems. And in auto, there's a MISRA auto standard development guidelines for vehicle-based software. So when you're dealing with this, you not only have to look at the general standards, but you also have the sector-specific standards. And if you do look at railways, the UK has something called the Yellow Book, and it's like five or six volumes. You can download it. It's free, but it covers all the guidelines to satisfy these particular standards, and it does talk about it from a regulatory point of view. Now, what is a safety case? This is something that's important for people to follow. Again, like I said, this is almost synonymous with certification. But the definition is that a safety case presents a clear, comprehensive, and defensible argument that a system, including software, is acceptably safe to operate in a particular context. The safety case must be supported by calculations and procedures. It must define the fundamental issues, the demonstration criteria, and define additional criteria for safety critical systems. Now, I've pulled this out from a four-party regulatory consensus report, which was developed by US, Canada, UK, and France. And the basic idea of safety case is being used widely in the UK and in Europe, and it does have its again, it's formed like in the terms of certification used in the aircraft industry in North America. So the fundamental issues requiring early consideration is you need to identify the safety importance of the system and its required integrity. You need to define your defense in depth and the extent of design diversity required. And this is important, like if you got triplicated systems or you got redundant systems, you will need to avoid common mode failures. You want to identify the total systems involved and all their interfaces. You need evidence of prior licensing by another regulatory body and the extent of operational experience. And you need to have the means of demonstrating the correctness of the safety requirement specification and the technical standards and methodologies to be followed during the production process. And usually these steps have to be agreed with the regulator. They have to be defined up front. So even before you start an actual product, before you actually start the requirements phase, you have all this upfront work. You need to identify the overall strategy for verification, validation, and testing of the software. You need to validate the tools used in the production process. You need to identify the information in a safety case and the hierarchical structure of the safety case content, and also identify the need for independent assessment and assessment criteria. Now, to demonstrate a safety-related system, you have to ensure that you have a systematic development process that minimizes fault in the design, and that includes human factors engineering. and it has to be performed by qualified personnel to well-defined standards. So the basic problems I discussed earlier, that you're having unqualified people developing these systems, you're having companies who do not have adequate standards and procedures. That comes up in this, again, this is reiterated, this is a must in a safety case. The system is able to perform its specified functions correctly at the times required and under default conditions and environmental and operational circumstances identified, assumed within the planned safety analysis. And that itself is, it could be a fair bit of work. You not only have to identify the environment that the system has to operate in, but you also need to have a test facility where you test the system with usage cases which are representative of that operative environment. The system is designed as far as practical to be fail-safe. The documentation describing the system is comprehensive, complete, and up-to-date. And documentation is a key factor, because what you've usually got is you've got you need to have a third-party review. There's always somebody reviewing what you've produced, so this is where the element of software documentation is increasingly important. Now, for safety-critical systems, you have some additional demonstration criteria. You need to show that the potential for common cause failures and redundant elements of the system is low. You need to have sufficient design diversity to protect against common cause failures. And design diversity, that could be using different hardware, different programming languages. You could have different programming teams. You could have different methodologies that you apply. And that is itself subject to a fair bit of debate on what constitutes adequate design diversity. But software code is shown to match a correct, complete, and unambiguous requirement specification. And like, you might wonder, why is this any different from any piece of software? Because really, you want to develop some software that does meet its requirements. But in the particular case of safety critical requirements, like your requirements have to be precisely specified, they need to be demonstrable, you need to verify them mathematically, and you also need to be able to validate against them. Software that's produced in a safety critical system should be as simple as possible, restricted to the functions necessary. It must be independently reviewable and analyzable. It should be maintainable without lowering system integrity, and it performs its functions accurately in a timely manner under operational conditions. Like, so the one example from my nuclear past was like the Darlington shutdown systems, where we went through a fairly rigorous process of licensing the shutdown systems, but we only got a temporary license. We got a license under the condition that we develop a standard and that we modify the software so it is maintainable. So we had to go, so it took about another 3 to 5 years effort to develop our own standards and procedures in-house, but then we also had to modify the software and make sure that it met the conditions, like it met the standards and procedures required by the standard, but it had to be maintainable. Maintainability was the key clause. You need to have a documented, traceable, and rigorous verification, validation, and post-delivery integrated system testing is performed, and tools used in the production process are shown to be valid and controlled. For an example, like I just thought I'd quickly go over the engineering principles we adopt in our standard. They're very specific to our process. Some of them can be generalized, but it just gives you some of the feel for the rigor that we had to get into. We had to document the required behavior of software using mathematical functions with well-defined syntax and semantics. The structure of the software was based on information hiding concepts and the use of recognized software engineering practices. And that's not new. That's been around for quite a while, but it has not been applied with any discipline or rigor. The outputs from each development process shall be reviewed to verify that they comply with the requirements specified in the inputs to that process. Again, that's common to, and a lot of general purpose software development. The difference is, in our case, we also had to have mathematical verification techniques or rigorous arguments of correctness to verify that the code meets the required behavior specified in the requirements documents. Verification of the software should be carried out throughout its entire life. All changes should be verified to the same or better degree of rigor as the original development. Independence of design and verification or validation personnel to the extent required shall be maintained to help ensure an unbiased verification or validation process. And there are different degrees of independence. Like you could have people where you have to look at independence where they're independent from the developers. They also have independent management. They also have maybe an independent reporting scheme so that they're not compromised by the project. And engineering of the software shall follow a planned and systematic process over the entire life of the software. So all the activities in the software lifecycle shall be carried out using approved procedures and guidelines that conform to the intent of the standard. Configuration management shall be maintained throughout the entire life of the software. You have to have training to ensure personnel have the knowledge, skill, and attitudes required to perform their jobs. Attitudes was another key component, like which we had to work with the regulator. Behavior over the full range of possible values of monitored variables shall be specified and implemented. We used a four-variable mathematical model of a computer system to define our requirements. And then all errors reported from interactions with hardware or pre-developed software shall be checked and handled. The software design should be as conservative as simple as possible, while meeting all requirements and retaining spare capacity for anticipated changes. Basic idea is that you only have the software that is necessary. Unnecessary software should not be in the machine. Even if you do have a product range, this is a case like of the Arian disaster. This is where software was carried over from one design to another. And that was fundamental, you know, a root cause that led to the disaster. Analysis shall be performed to identify and evaluate safety hazards associated with the computer system. And again, hazards analysis, that's a very key component of safety. Now for safety critical systems, this is quite important. In our case, we had to demonstrate the reliability of the safety critical software using statistically valid trajectory-based methodology in which a reliability hypothesis is proven to the degree of confidence required. And basically, we had to set up a test bed. We had to run 10,000 statistically independent tests to demonstrate a reliability of the software is no worse than 10 to the minus 3. We couldn't go further than that because that meant that it would be a magnitude of range of tests. So that's why a safety critical system is just necessarily small, because the effort, like both the intellectual effort plus the effort to really test it properly, is enormous. And then adequate testing shall be performed to meet predefined test coverage criteria. So in addition to testing, you always do your normal testing. You do your unit integration, subsystem integration, system integration, and your validation tests. So you could take those same principles, you could drop a few lines, and probably 75 to 80% of it applies to any normal piece of software. But there are some particular issues which are very particular to safety. I was lucky that I managed to get an article from Felix Redmill for the next standards column of the computer magazine. So I pulled out some points from his paper. So really he's going on like, what are the key issues from standardization? One is human factors. Humans are recognized as being system components, but risk analysis does not universally and systematically address the risks posed by them. So psychologists have developed a number of human reliability assessment techniques, and their principles need to be drawn into engineering risk analysis processes. So this, if you go back to what John Knight says, is about the multidiscipline nature of what safety critical software system engineering is. This is where you not only have to have, like, you have to take human factors, like a software developer has to take into account human factors, hazards analysis. He has to work with systems engineering people. Commercial off-the-shelf software and software-based systems, particular problem. These systems are supposed to be developed. They're supposed to save cost and money. The problem is qualifying these systems for a particular level of application. Safety-related data. Many systems depend on data for their safe operation, yet standards really say nothing about its preparation, validation, security, availability, and integrity of this data. So you need particular standards guidance in this area. Management risk. Major accident investigations almost invariably implicate management. Risk analysis does not address management risks, and standards touch on them only through the need for safety management systems. So if you go back to what Nancy Levison said about system safety, and also that's what system safety is, that it's much more than the technical aspects. These are the areas in which we need more guidance, more standardization. Demonstration of safety. Safety must be both achieved and shown to be achieved. The extent of demonstration and rules for developing and expressing it are barely touched on in standards. And the safety case is a vehicle for making and arguing claims about safety. It's fast gaining acceptance in Europe, but standards need to catch up. But again, like, if you talk about safety cases being somewhat synonymous with certification, you have the same problem elsewhere, like the certification cases is, you know, similar to the safety case. An independent safety assessment. Regulators rely on third-party assessment and the conscientiousness of developers and operators, yet the extent and the roles of the assessors are not agreed. And there is a need, again, for definition, standardization, and propagation of knowledge in this area. So for future safety critical systems, computer-controlled systems are increasingly applied in other areas related to human safety, such as telecommunication systems, management of water systems, transportation systems, banking and financial systems, electricity generation and distribution systems, and fire protection systems on oil gas platforms. All these applications are extensively computerized, and computer failure can lead to an extensive loss of service. And the widespread loss of water or electricity supply has obvious implications for health and safety in addition to national security. So the importance and the growing need, like a nature of the safety critical systems, is increasing. And the trend towards the new and increased functionality is unavoidably accompanied by increased complexity. So complex systems integration, whether for military aircraft, construction, or healthcare, is difficult. Integration of the artifacts requires integration of the processes involved in their development. This, in turn, requires integration of the information systems which underpin the processes. And the integration of processes ultimately entails integration of all the organizations involved in the development and delivery of the system. Now, I've got some example project failures, but I won't bother going into that. Like, what I'll do is I'll briefly go into some security. Unfortunately, I can't find. Do you know how to find the files? Well, what we'll do is maybe after John's talk, I can sort of just give a few summary slides on what's common between safety and security. And really just security dimensions. Again, like I said, the safety considerations are similar for security. As for security, you need to consider security at all aspects. And you also perform a risk analysis process on threats in security, which is quite similar to the hazards analysis process. Okay, thank you very much.
That Thank you for listening to the IEEE Computer Society Standard Speaker Series podcast. If you would like additional information on the standards discussed in this program, or would like to learn more about membership with the IEEE Computer Society and the advanced technical information available, please visit www.computer.org. Some of the music provided is from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.